Hello, and welcome to Say That Again Slowly, the Cambridge Festival podcast where students at Cambridge University chat with the experts who have contributed to the festival. We try to pair up students with researchers and authors from very different disciplines to bring things back to basics, so there are no stupid questions here. My name is Iona Warne, and I'm a third-year undergraduate in English. Today, I'll be interviewing Dr. Joe, who is running an event called Wonders of the Human Body at the Babbage Lecture Theatre at 3 p.m. on the 24th of March. Hello, Dr. Joe. Please could
Hello,
you
introduce
yourself and what it is that you do.
Absolutely. So I'm Joe Montgomery, also known as Dr. Joe Science, and I'm a scientist, a teacher and a trainer. I wear a few different hats, all sharing my love and passion for science and education.
Wonderful. So without giving too many spoilers for your talk, in your opinion, what is the most wonderful thing about the human body?
With a background in neuroscience research, I would have to say that the most wonderful thing about the human body is the brain, not only in everything it does to control the inputs and outputs of our body, but also those higher order skills that we have as humans as well.
So I guess jumping off that, do you have any surprising facts you could tell our listeners?
Well, there will be lots and lots of different surprising facts and interesting turns within the talk on the human body. Let me just think of, an amazing one now.
Showstopper.
Your brain is about the size of your two fists put together. So a nice little comparison that I often say is if you hold up one fist, then that's the size of your heart, approximately. And if you put the two fists together, then that's about the size of your brain.
Wow. So what would you say is the typical reaction to your talks?
I would say the typical reaction tends to be enjoyment and engagement. I definitely like to bring a little bit of wonder into the things that I do, but I'm very much about the how as well as the wow. So making sure that there's some kind of fundamental scientific understanding underpinning the things that I do. So it's not whiz, pop, bang, but it's engaging and thought-provoking.
I read an article. I read a few of your blogs and I jumped into articles afterwards because they were so good. And it said that, or maybe you said this, I can't quite remember, that typically science in primary education is full of lots of fun activities, but not much science. Is that something you think is still true?
I think that can be the case, certainly. And there have been a recent research review by Ofsted, so the body that kind of inspects schools, suggesting that in some schools, and this definitely is not happening everywhere, there is some amazing science happening, especially at primary in schools, but that sometimes there's been a focus on fun activities without the kind of the depth of learning underpinning them. So there is a definite move towards meaningful inquiry and asking relevant questions that children can answer in the classroom.
So what do you think students, or what do you find that students get the most excited to learn about then?
There are lots of amazing topics in the primary science curriculum and beyond. And I would say the most engaging, I'm always asked if I blow things up. That's always a popular one. There is still a bit of a misconception that science is all about explosions. But the topics that really engage students are things like space and actually animals and the environment as well. Our young people today are rightly very invested and interested in the environment and in climate.
Is it ever a challenge to get younger students to engage with science?
I find actually the younger the pupils, the more engaged that they are. I think we're born curious, and science is all about curiosity. It's about asking questions, wondering how things work and trying to find things out. And in my experience, young people are full of curiosity and full of interest in the world around them and how science works. So I would say it's definitely not a, a, a barrier or a difficulty to engage young people in science, the research suggests that what happens and those interests in science are there, but they don't necessarily translate into aspirations to continue to work in science. Now, we don't necessarily need the population to all be scientists, although that's great. There are some lovely, fulfilling STEM careers. But what's important to me, actually, is that we have a population that has a level of scientific literacy so that they can engage in those debates and discussions around about the world around us.
Mm. Do you think that became more important in schools when COVID happened?
I think there was perhaps kind of negatives and positives, perhaps of the pandemic in perceptions of science. And I think there has been a move towards more investigations, more experiments, more inquiry in primary in particular over the last 10 years, actually. But certainly during the pandemic, when we saw this in the general public population as well, is that there was suddenly a bit more of an interest in how things work, you know, how vaccines are produced, the following the science, but also that kind of, you know, spilled over into other areas as well, understanding graphs. We were presented with lots of data and information. And so we need to be able to unpick that and understand all sorts of different facets of science as well. So I think there was a particular upswing in public interest in science during the pandemic.
And you saw that in the students as well?
Particularly in older students, I would say. So I mostly work with primary age children, but I do also work with all the way up to postgraduate, actually. But all through secondary, definitely there was more of an interest in how those things work. But even in our younger children as well, there's a bit of an upswing in how certain things work. Yeah,
that's very cool. I have a bit of a fun question on that, because I found out that you taught at pretty much every level, and I wanted to know, what's the best thing about teaching at each level, and how do teaching challenges change across the different levels of education?
Oh, nice question. So firstly, the reason that I do that is because I love variety and challenge in the things that I do. So I like to work on lots of different projects in lots of different ways. So whilst I primarily work with primary age children, I do also do a little bit of work with secondary, including GCSE and A level, but also in one of the roles that I have, I work with postgraduate, postdoctoral, and fully fledged grown up scientists as well. And I suppose there are lots of similarities in terms of being able to take complex information and disseminate it in an understandable way, depending on your audience. But there are obviously lots of differences at different levels as well. At primary, there's much more curiosity and enthusiasm, I would suggest, sort of palpable from the children. That definitely diminishes in the teenage years, and adult learners are very different as well. So I also work with teachers, supporting teachers in their professional development too. And I suppose the challenges really at working with those different stages are being flexible in the approach and the things that we do. But everybody likes to get hands-on and have a little bit of a play. And so that's something that transcends all age groups, I would say.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I guess this is again jumping off something that you've just been saying. But how interdisciplinary would you say that your education has been?
That's really interesting, actually. So I've always been something of a polymath. So whilst I absolutely love science and indeed have, you know, spent my career in science, I've always been interested in all sorts of different things as well. So I'm very creative. I love languages. I'm really interested in history. And in fact, so when I was at school, I found it quite difficult to narrow my interests and to follow just a sort of a small area. So even at A level, I did biology and chemistry, but I also studied French and Latin. So I kind of did a little bit of a spread there. Obviously, in different countries around the world, you can study more subjects to a higher level whilst you're at school. During my undergrad, I managed to squeeze in some subsidiary French subjects as well. So I suppose I've always kind of taken on board some different areas of the curriculum, very cross-curricular. And one of the reasons that I have the sort of the portfolio career that I have now is because I'm interested in lots and lots of different things. And, you know, the world isn't compartmentalised into little boxes. So I really like making those links between different areas, whether that's different areas of the curriculum when teaching or just in terms of the different skills and attributes that I bring to the things that I do.
Yeah, I feel very similar because I mean, it was because of COVID I had to drop an A level. I couldn't do it at home very well, and I had to leave chemistry behind. And I'm now studying English, which I do think is thoroughly interdisciplinary. So, would you say that interdisciplinary education is something we need more of in this country?
I think we need more choices and more opportunities. So for those people who like to work that way, then I think those are great opportunities. I would absolutely have loved to have studied the International Baccalaureate, for example, because it would have given me a real breadth of subjects. Or had I been educated in Scotland, maybe I would have done lots of different hires. So for me, A-levels were quite restrictive. And perhaps I would have benefited from doing something more broadly. But also, there, you know, for some people, they know exactly what they want to do. They're very focused on an area. And I think there should also be the opportunity to follow those dreams too. My PhD was also quite interdisciplinary, although it's obviously it was a science PhD and focused on neuroscience. I still sort of sat between lots of different areas. So I did some animal behavioural research, but also looking at some neurochemistry and some endocrinology as well. And so I found myself having to sort of to dip into papers from all sorts of different fields and areas to bring the things together. So I think choices in how we best like to learn and study and find things out would be beneficial.
Okay, I'm just going to spin it away a little bit. So you shared your journey from science to teaching in an article at the ASE Primary Science Journal. What inspired you to become a teacher, or was it kind of inevitable?
I think that depends who you ask. So my parents were both teachers, so there was always kind of teaching around me. But I suppose I was directed away from that, and also really wanted to pursue the kind of the scientific research career. I've never really had a grand plan, I would say, though. I've always sort of been interested in science and in education, and have sort of followed my interests in that area. And you could possibly say that I was sort of teaching by stealth. So I was always very involved in public engagement, both as an undergraduate and a postgraduate student. And that sort of grew and snowballed after I had my own children. So I was sort of doing teaching in the back door by running science clubs and public engagement activities in schools. I was chair of governors for a primary school for a while. And then I sort of combined my two areas of work by running a science outreach scheme for a pharmaceutical company for several years before I was actually basically worn down by a head teacher who I worked with regularly, who insisted that I really needed to become a teacher and to work in his school. And so I was kind of bullied into it, really. But it was also a sort of a natural progression of the different areas and experiences that I was amassing.
So with settling into primary school teaching now, is that your favourite level to teach at, do you think?
I think, yes. If I had to pick just one, then primary is definitely where I love to be. I love the enthusiasm and the curiosity and the helping to shape and inspire minds that you can that you get to do at primary. But having said that, I really missed those interactions with older students and with kind of the cutting edge research as well, which is why now I spend some of my time teaching primary children about science, and I spend some of my time working with scientists and teaching older students as well.
I'm going to keep going back to primary school education because I find it so fascinating. So with introducing younger students to the factual scientific world, how important is it, do you feel, to teach them about their body? Is that one of the first places you'll go to as a teacher?
So obviously, as teachers, we are guided by the national curriculum that we are required to teach students. And it's very well sequenced. There are building blocks there, age appropriate and stage appropriate understanding. And it's really important that we follow that sequence so that we know that children can build upon their prior experiences and knowledge. And it's interesting that you said that about the factual knowledge of science, because actually, particularly at primary, science is a factual based subject, but it is also very much a doing subject as well. So we have the two strands of teaching in science, which is the subject or content knowledge, but also we have the doing science, the inquiry and the working scientifically, and they really go hand in hand. And it's impossible to separate one from the other, actually, and good primary science teaching interweaves that factual content knowledge with opportunities for children to apply that in new contexts, to find things out and investigate, and to help make up their own mind about an understanding of the world.
So what's your favourite hand-in-hand teaching? What's your favourite topic to start with?
That's a really good question. I do love the human body and learning and teaching and learning about different animals as well. But there are so many wonderful things within the primary science curriculum. There's all sorts of explorations into materials and their properties and how they work together, and chemical reactions and changing states. So actually, kind of the chemistry within the primary curriculum is really engaging to teach. But I kind of love all of it, to be honest. So it might be how our bodies work, but it also might be kind of more interactions and how things make sense within the world around us.
So you also produced an award-winning blog with resources to help teachers feel more confident and excited about teaching science. Which resource is your favourite to use and recommend?
That's a really good question. And actually, quite a lot of my work with teachers, supporting teachers, is helping to signpost to really useful places. Now, there are some amazing resources out there for those kind of engaging hands-on opportunities. But actually, as teachers, there are also lots of amazing resources. And I'm just going to pick out two, if that's all right, of ones that are really useful for teachers to support primary science teaching and learning. And those are the plan assessment resources, which help to break down that national curriculum that I mentioned earlier in terms of the sequencing, so that we can understand what's come before, what the children need to know in that particular topic, and where that learning goes on to next. And the other one I'd like to pick out is something called the TAPS, or Teacher Assessment in Primary Science, which really helps to support the kind of the working scientifically side that I mentioned before. So not so much the subject content knowledge, but the doing of science, and helps teachers to really focus in on supporting children to develop those skills. So those are probably the two main resources that I think are kind of fundamental, that all teachers need to know. But in terms of kind of inspiring science for everybody else, the world is absolutely full of engaging content. We're really fortunate to be able to access all sorts of things via the internet these days.
So When it comes to teaching adults about science, what kind of environment do you find yourself going into to talk to people who aren't students anymore but want to learn about science?
So I suppose I do that in a number of ways, actually, either in terms of family audiences or working with teachers in their development, and also then thinking actually about some of the sort of the transferable skills that I train scientists with. I would say, just to pick up each of those in turn, when I'm working with family audiences, there's not really a difference between working with children and working with families. Everybody's engaged by it, by playing, by doing, by hands-on. If I'm thinking about the places that I might be engaging with teachers, then there's sort of a number of ways that I might work with them. So I might I work with an organisation called the Primary Science Quality Mark, which is like a sort of a developmental journey to strengthen primary science teaching and learning. And generally, I'm working with science leads, so teachers in schools who have responsibility for overseeing the science. And they're very much engaged and enthused in the process, in their personal development, but also for improving the outcomes of pupils in their school as well. So I might be working in schools or with a group of teachers within another organisation. If I'm thinking about my work with scientists, then similarly, they are motivated and engaged to learn particular skills which are useful for the development of their career. So I'm never really working with an audience that isn't engaged, which is a really lovely position to be in.
That's really nice, yeah. I wanted to ask about, I don't think you've mentioned it today, but I saw it on your website. The STEM ambassador stuff. I wonder if you could tell the listeners more about that organisation and what it achieves.
Absolutely. So STEM ambassador sits under an umbrella organisation called STEM Learning. One of their remits is to manage the STEM ambassador scheme. Now, STEM ambassadors have been around for more than 20 years, and I've been a STEM ambassador for almost all of that time as well. And that's a volunteer role that people involved in STEM fields can get involved in to share their expertise and experience and passion with students and young people to promote STEM careers and STEM subjects as well. So that's something that I do kind of alongside my other roles in a sort of a volunteering public engagement outreach sort of capacity.
On Sunday the 24th, you'll be giving a talk on the wonders of the human body. What kind of interactive experiences can families look forward to with that?
Well, without giving too much away, it will be a very interactive talk. So we say talk, it's just a very big workshop, really. So there'll be lots of opportunities for families to get involved as we have a little bit of a tour through some of the amazing things and slightly weird things that our bodies can do. So there'll be some games and interactive activities, some kind of trials and challenges to get involved in, some surprising twists along the way as well.
So without giving too much away, what do you expect will have the biggest reaction from the audience?
So we will be exploring all sorts of amazing things that our body do. We'll be exploring some optical illusions. We'll be tricking our senses. We'll be seeing how fast we can react to different stimuli, maybe putting a little bit of competition between adults and children in the room as well. Exploring some of the amazing things that our muscles and tendons can do, as well as thinking about some of the ways that our brain controls the things that we do.
Sounds like a pulse-raising talk. Are they going
We may even be investigating heart rate.
Amazing. Are there going to be any interesting props that people can look forward to?
So there will be lots of hands-on opportunities, so involving some bits of prop, and we will also be using my trusty torso friend to help us explain some of the bits of our body as well.
That's wonderful. I don't want to ask you any more in case it all just unravels the whole talk and all the suspense is gone. So who's the best audience for your talk on Sunday?
So I think the best audience for my talk are definitely families. It's aimed at children between the ages of 5 and 14, but it's perfectly accessible to anyone from the age of 3 to 103.
Perfect. I mean, I think most people do have a human body, so there'll be something for everyone.
Absolutely, yes.
That's so wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Jo, for coming and talking to me today. And for all of the listeners, please come along to Dr. Jo's talk at the Cambridge Festival, which will be at the Babbage Lecture Theatre at 3 p.m. on Sunday the 24th of March. And make sure to follow the Cambridge Festival on Facebook, X, and Instagram to hear more about fascinating events. Thank you.